Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite time of day, getting to spend time with you prescribing hope for healthy families. And I have a special treat for you today. I always love field trip days. Maybe that's my days of working in schools and working as a school nurse. I'm with a school nurse today, and we're having a field trip. We are on location here with Ryan and Jessica Walling. It's always great to have a conversation where we can be eye to eye, heart to heart. I heard the Walling story, actually. Okay, all right, that was already not true. My producer heard the Walling story on the local news. I watched this. It absolutely captivated my heart. And I thought, oh, I really want to have a conversation. And I told my producer, I said, you know what I'm going to say? She said, I'm already on it. And here we are to share this remarkable story with you today. I'm really just grateful to be able for you to be here. Thank you so much, Ryan and Jessica, for being here. And so today we're beginning with a story that spans continents and hearts. Yes, I have a flair for the melodramatic, but this is a dramatic story. It really is. We're talking about a journey of faith, family, and unexpected beginnings. After being told they couldn't have children, Pastor Ryan and Jessica Walling began exploring adoption. And when one door closed in Nepal, another opened in Ethiopia, and that is where they saw a photo. I can already feel like I see the photo in my mind. Four siblings, older than most adoptive families are willing to consider. And something about that picture told Jessica, these are our kids. And despite the overwhelming odds, they said yes. Yes to four children who had promised each other they wouldn't be separated. I'm already going to start crying. In this segment, we're going to talk about how the Wallings discerned God's call, how they overcame common fears, and how they stepped into one of the most courageous yeses of their life. And as I was sitting here visiting with the Wallings before we went live, we were just talking about how God writes our story. We just have to have the submission, the obedience, the courage, the patience to let him do that. And I'm so grateful that we're going to share that story today. So I want you to take us back to that first moment when you saw the photo of the siblings in Ethiopia. What was going through your heart and mind? What had led to that moment? Who's going to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay, great.
So I told him yesterday when we are talking about this, I said probably insanity. But just being naive and just thinking, oh, I've got this. I've been through nursing school. I've done some hard things. Sure, why not? And also just wanting, you know, we can complete our family all in one, you know, one swoop. So it just, I don't know, it kind of made sense. We had talked about maybe two or three from Nepal. And so what's one more, you know? I mean, more the merrier.
Yeah. For me, seeing the picture and hearing what some of the things that she was saying, she was like, Ryan, I think this is the four. I think these are our kids. Mm. My response was, no, that's not right. It's not four. It can't be four. My response was, okay, you know, God, fix her heart and lead us to the two or three
and
that
you're
we had
the
talked
pastor.
About. That's right.
That's intimidating.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But all along, obviously God had it right and she had it right. And, he fixed my heart. So.
Well, that is just amazing. And I know there's a lot of people who probably relate to that story because I've heard that before. You just see a child, you see a photo of a child, and you just feel the voice of God speak to you. And there's a lot of people who ask me about that. Like, how do you hear God? Is he speaking audibly to
right.
you? How did you get to a point in your life where you felt so confident that these were your kids? What gave you that confidence?
Well, I want to chime
go
in
ahead.
Right here and
you
just
go
say
right ahead.
I've learned over the years, and maybe some of your listeners who are husbands will identify with this, but I've figured out that God speaks to her about 6 months before he speaks to me.
Can you say it again for people in the back?
But
I mean, I've heard people call, you know, God nudges, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. whatever you'd like to say, but I don't know, seeing their picture, hearing their story, what little of it we knew at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know. You just a pull just of, I don't know, inside going, I think this is where you should go. I think this is, you know, I think this is them. I think this is who you should pursue, you know.
And I'm not sure if it's part of it, at least, was we're going to keep taking steps of faith in this direction mm-hmm. until the door closes. Mm-hmm. We wanted children. went through infertility, couldn't have children, wanted to adopt. One door closed, another door opened. We walked through it, just keep taking steps until God says no.
And when you saw that picture, Jessica, for the first time, you didn't know at that time, I think, that they had promised each other that they wouldn't split up. So what was the backstory? What was God doing on the other side of the world as he was working in your heart?
I'll chime in.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, we're still putting pieces together of, mm-hmm. of their story as we've heard it. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've been home with us now 13 years and just over 13 years. Mm-hmm. And so when they came home, they were older children, I guess you would say. Yeah. That their English was broken. Broken is not even the right word. It was almost non-existent.
Very limited.
And so hearing their story and putting those pieces together, and plus you're hearing these stories of what's happening from mm-hmm. the kids that it was happening to were, 3, 4, 8, 10, 11, as these things are happening. So you're getting stories from a child's mind, the best that they can remember it, put back together into English. And so there were all kinds of things that were going on that God was orchestrating behind the scenes. And my kids and my church have heard me say, anytime you think God did a thing or is doing a thing, he's doing 10,000 things you don't see.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, too, I thought about this. So the agency that we sought out that we had heard about, they specialize in waiting children, which meant sibling groups, kids with special needs. And, I guess it kind of made sense. Like, we have been waiting for a long time. We had been doing all this preparation and research. And just when you dive into the world of adoption, there's so many options. There's so many countries. And so we've done all this waiting. They've done waiting. They've been the orphanage about 4 years. And that's also, touched my heart of, these kids, they deserve a family. They need a family. Like, why would we not, why would we not say yes to them?
Yeah. Mm. And waiting, I'm sorry to interrupt, for those that may be listening, waiting, just the word there is paper ready. Like, all of their papers were supposed to be in order, and they were just waiting on a family to say, I choose you.
So. That's so convicting. And in the middle of all of this, you're a nurse. And so I can see that coming across in your heart and thinking, sure, yeah, we can take care of 4 kids, right? Because God, I feel like God even equipped you, use that in your calling to say, okay, yeah, we could do this, because nurses do that kind of thing all the time. But looking at it saying, okay, 4, you've got Ryan on board now. But God threw you a curveball, right? a big curveball. So yeah. Tell us how that, what happened that was unexpected, how that didn't dissuade you from still going to Ethiopia and picking up your kids.
Mm-hmm. So I think we agreed and signed the contract to adopt them, I believe, December 30th or 31st of 2010. And then by late February, I guess, it was after Super Bowl, actually around Super Bowl, whenever that is, I was not feeling well, and then soon found out that I was pregnant.
The timing.
Yeah. Right.
Never been pregnant before.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And so we were actually, of course, freaking out, but also I guess that's a good word of okay, God, what are you doing here? We are just really shocked.
Yeah.
But also we had, we've grown up in families that when you commit to something, you do what you say you're going to do. And so these were our kids. We already knew their story. We had committed them. They knew about us. Of course we're going to follow through. It's going to look a little different than we thought, but hey, we'll figure it out as we go, I guess.
Yeah. And there were people that said we were crazy for adopting 4, and then finding out that now we're going to have a biological child. Uh-huh. It was, well, you're not still going to adopt, are you? Oh. And it's
people, don't say that.
Yeah. That's people say well-meaning things, but sometimes they're not the right things. Mm-hmm. Like she said, we were for sure going to go through with it. I'll be honest. I was a little upset at the pregnancy and at the timing. I was upset with God because our journey, we walked side by side with other couples who also could not have biological children, and us and others, going back to things that people say that they just don't know what they're saying sometimes is, people would say, well, I know this friend and they signed papers to adopt, or they adopted, and then the Lord allowed them to get pregnant. And I thought, we're going to be another one of those stories that our name is going to get used to hurt someone else who, you know,
because that's not always everyone's
story. That's not everybody's story. I mean, some of those couples that we walked side by side with, they didn't have biological children. They adopted, you know, and that's how God built their family. But again, going back to what you said at the beginning, I mean, God writes our stories if we'll, you know, just allow him to do that and follow him faithfully in it.
What was that like going over to Ethiopia? You're expecting a baby. That's not easy to travel. Mm-hmm. And you're going to pick up four kids. Walk us through what that was like.
So I had a good friend, Haley, that went with me because we knew that I would have to travel before. I went earlier than probably expected because I was pregnant and I had to travel way before my due date. But I also had, both parents had to meet the children before the adoption could be finalized. So I had a friend that went with us and was the best traveling companion ever. And just, I mean, she took the photos that, I mean, we just are just treasures.
Yeah. I wasn't there on the first trip. Jessica went and this friend, shout out Haley Scully, is like she's the reason that we have some great pictures of our youngest son, Iyasu, hugging his mom. And she has a pregnant belly and you know, it's just beautiful pictures that bring tears to my eyes to even think about.
And he wouldn't let go of you, right? Yeah.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Well, what were those early days like going from, I mean, you are waiting for more than a decade to have a baby and then you have five kids in the same year. And what was that like? Because I think sometimes people romanticize the thought of adoption and they think about all of those good parts, which there are good parts, but there's hard parts too. So what was that like and how did you get through it?
It was exhausting.
Yeah, I bet.
So Evie was premature and she was in NICU for 3 weeks. And then so we brought home, she was born at 32 weeks. So that was a whole challenge in itself, just getting adjusted to not only a newborn, but a newborn with extra needs that we didn't really prepare for. And also a good reason that I traveled a lot earlier. So that wasn't in the, you know, that wasn't in the plans, but I think just being able to take those baby steps into, like, she was 8 months old when they came home, so we were in a good routine, but of course, you know, you always try to, you try to make a schedule, you try to keep to all those things for everyone's benefit, but, and then trying to keep them, get them on a schedule, and, like, we're all taking naps together, because guess what, mom needed it too, and, you know, even though they were older, we were like, we're just going to have quiet time in our room, and they were probably like, why are we all, why are we, you know, 11 and 12 year old, why are we in our room, taking, resting? And I was like, it's for mom.
Absolutely.
But you also had to have a schedule, obviously, because when you're trying to run a household of that many people and the newness for all of us. So people made fun of us like, this is when we eat, this is when we go to bed. These are exact times and we don't budge. And people thought that was crazy, but it was survival mode.
Well, and also for their, like, I mean, they'd obviously been through a big transition. It wasn't just us transitioning. They were huge cultural, you know, just shocking, you know, the differences. And so their brains needed a rest. And I'm sure they were very overwhelmed as well.
Yeah. Well, so many beautiful things about this. And looking at it, we were just talking right before the show started about how God bringing you through hard things, looking at that infertility journey, that's not anything you would have ever have wanted. But you look back and you see how God was refining you and preparing you and giving you all of the strength and the character that you needed to be able to do that. And I asked you, I said, if you can say one thing, what's one message? And you said, trust God to write your story. That's what we came up with. And that's what we're talking about. We have a lot more to talk about with this story. It really has an ending that had me in tears watching in the car. I may have watched your new story like maybe 3 times. So maybe people are going to look this up. Such a great story of hope. And that's what we're all about, is prescribing hope for healthy families. And we will have more with Ryan and Jessica Walling when we come back. Don't go away. We'll see you right on the other side of this break with some hope and some help. See you then.
Candace talks about finding out she was pregnant. Thankfully, an ultrasound provided by Preborn allowed her to hear her baby's heartbeat.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. And I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
Preborn currently has clinics that do not have ultrasound machines. Would you consider a leadership gift and sponsor a machine today? These life-saving machines cost $15,000, more than most centers can afford. Your donation will save countless lives for years to come. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR.
I believe in the sun. I believe in the risen one. I believe I overcome by the power of his blood. Amen.
Welcome back, friends. That's Because He Lives, Amen, by Matt Maher. And we are on location today, which is always a fun treat for me. I'm here with married couple Ryan and Jessica Walling. Jessica is a nurse, so that's just a fun connection for me for sure. And Ryan is a pastor here in La Porte, Texas, just outside of Houston. And we are talking about their journey and God writing their story, their call to adoption. If you were listening in the first segment, they were talking about more than 10 years of struggling with infertility. Jessica seeing a photo of four siblings in Ethiopia saying to her husband, "That's my kid." 6 months later, you were in. She is planning to travel. They signed the paper in December. And then in February, she finds out she's expecting. What an amazing, amazing story. And one of the boys wrote something on your hand. I do want to hear about this story. When you went over there, we were talking about you being in Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that moment.
So we go to the orphanage, and of course, there's lots of kids that want to see me and Haley.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah. Yeah, they they want to show you everything. They want to show you their rooms. They want to show you their belongings. There's a baby room that has a lot of babies and toddlers, and Rahel would definitely wanted that. That was one of her favorite spots, and she wanted to show me that. But just in that, we're there several hours playing with the kids. You know, we brought puzzles, we brought markers, we brought colors, treats. You know, so we're playing with the things that I had brought for them, and Yosef, which would have been about, about 6 or 7 at the time, took a pen and wrote, "You are mom," on the inside of my palm.
Oh, my goodness.
And, of course, you know, my friend Haley that I talked about, she photographs that, and it's just a forever etched in my memory, but super special. And they're through as much English as they knew, they're trying to talk to us. And so a lot of it is pointing and, mm-hmm. taking and, let me show you this, but, you didn't know where you were going, but, it was fun. It was, very exciting, but really surreal because we've been, learning more and more of the kid's story and, mm-hmm. Getting to talk to them a little bit through Skype, talking to the agency, just kind of find. And there were other people, other Americans that had met them because the other people visiting the orphanage, and getting to hear what they knew about the kids. And they're mm-hmm. like, "They're such great kids. They need a family. They deserve a family." And so that was kind of cool to find out all these things even before we met, before I met mm-hmm. them, and to see that, brought to life. It was exactly true.
And what have you learned of their story? You talked about how you're still even learning parts of their story. And I know that you see God at work in all of those things. So what have you learned, and how has that showed you how God was in every step of the way?
I mean, we continue to learn things from their story. They've been home 13 years now, and they'll still get together. We just came back from family vacation, and I forced us to rent a 12-passenger van so that
it.
We could all be in this van together for 14 hours. Force it. But even hearing them just a few weeks ago, remembering things and, oh, do you remember when this happened and that happened? And no, that's not the way that happened, you know, because it's in the minds of these younger kids and they're still figuring out what their story is. But looking backward in time from our story of marriage and infertility and hearing the pieces and parts of their story and looking back, it's not always that you get to see all that God was doing. Mm-hmm. But it's just such a mercy. It's such a kindness of God to allow you to look back and see his providential hand guiding all of these different pieces and parts. It's not everybody gets that opportunity, but it's a blessing when you do.
Well, Ryan, you're a pastor. So I feel like a special kind of pressure there. Like you're supposed to be super spiritual about everything.
I'm supposed to see everything that God's doing all the time.
Right, and be perfectly calm and at peace and always on your best, but you are human. And you have even already, you know, just talked about, shared openly some of your struggles that you've had as human, because pastors are human, in case you didn't know that. Pastors are human. What were the struggles that you had? How did God sustain you during the things that maybe you thought, hey, this is a little harder than I thought it was going to be? Yeah. And how did you see God meet you in those moments?
I mean, I would love to say it was through his word. I opened the Bible and he just spoke to me so clearly. Most of the time it was the church. It was the people of God being the hands and feet of Jesus to us through infertility, through the adoption process, through the ups and downs of the adoption process. But I had this opportunity, which is a strange, rare opportunity to meet a pastor, preacher who I won't name, but many listening would know. He's written books and fairly well known, and he and his wife were going through the adoption process as well, and they were actually adopting from Nepal, and both of our adoptions had just recently failed, and I asked him, I said, how do you keep going? Where do we go from here? What are y'all going to do? You know, and I just remember him saying, a high view of God's sovereignty. You just have to have a high view of God's sovereignty. This didn't catch him off guard. He knew this was coming. Keep that high view of God's sovereignty. And so my wife, my kids, my church have heard me say over and over and over, like, God is in control. He is sovereign. He is guiding this. He's writing this story. And so often, and we see this over and over in the biblical narrative, that people want to take their story and write it themselves, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, we could sit here and list examples of Abraham and Sarah and, you know, on and on and on. But when you're able to look back and see that God's working in that, when you can see that in the past, then you can trust that in the future, I think. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what has sustained me through a lot of those difficult times.
I think when we try to write our own story, we just come up pitifully short compared to what God wants to do for us. I mean, God's ways are higher than our ways. His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. And I had actually shared with our listeners, I was recently in Athens, Greece, and I visited the Acropolis, which of course is beautiful. It is amazing. But all of those monuments are crumbling. And you look over and you see the Areopagus, this big rock where Paul was preaching. And Paul's words have endured. I'm sure Paul would not have wanted his story to be, oh, let me be this really wealthy, well-educated guy who gets martyred for Christ, you know? But I don't think that he would change anything. And looking at what God calls us through, it's just, I'm sure that this wasn't the way that you wrote your story, but now God has just blessed your obedience in that and seen that. And we talked earlier a little bit about what... Well, actually, let me ask you about the meaningful moments. Let's talk about some of those meaningful moments when your new family began to bond, because I'm sure you had those worries, like, okay, we have a biological child, we have these adopted children. Am I going to have enough physical energy, emotional reserve to handle all of this at once, to blend them together as one family? Because I'm sure there's four and there's one, one's a baby, some are older. You're talking about different cultures, different continents. I mean, that is overwhelming. When did you start to see, okay, God is in this and we're going to be okay?
I want to steal the opportunity to speak again. This is one of my favorite things. And in case I don't think it was mentioned, but So our firstborn was born, and then 8 months later, the four came home from Ethiopia. And shortly after that, during then, we realized that she was pregnant with our second or sixth, whichever way you want to count that. And so there's 15 months between our two biological, well, they're not little girls anymore, but our two biological girls, and four came home right in the middle. So zero to six in 15 months.
That's intense.
Was insane. Yeah. Intense is probably a better word, but it was crazy. But the thing that I just, again, look back and realize is we had these four kids that we loved indeed, but not necessarily in relationship yet.
Right.
And we've brought them into our home, and quite frankly, they're strangers. Mm-hmm. We don't know them, and they don't know us. But one of the bonding agents, if you will, is Evie. This 8-month-old baby girl was our daughter and their little sister. And looking back and remembering those moments of that was their little sister, and so therefore these are our kids. You know, I don't know, there was something about having
everyone
a newborn
wants to
there.
Play with a baby, and you know, that's just a joint, you know, joy, you know, that that they were excited about too, as much as we were. And so, yeah, for sure, that was a bonding connection.
Evie's 13 now, and if when I'm sharing that story, if she just says, she says, "Well, I'm just that good."
You've raised her well. But you know what? The amazing thing to me in that, in God's story, is that God uses everyone, even an 8-month-old baby, is part of that, and her life. Value, just the value and the way that she matters in that story, I think is really beautiful. And you know, you are a pastor of a church, and so you had a church walking alongside you. And I think let's talk about that a little bit, because the likelihood is probably most people listening are not going to be called to Africa to adopt kids. Although that may be you. So if that's you, this is your sign.
That's right.
But a lot of people are more likely to know someone who is walking through that journey. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit earlier about things maybe not to say, things not to do, and how it is hard. It is struggle, but it's hard to know who to be vulnerable with. You know, how much do you share and how much do you protect them? What would you say, now knowing what you know, what would you say to people who think, I know somebody who's walking through this? How could you best support them? What do you think?
You were talking about, you know, early on, and I was just in there thinking, you're like, how did y'all do it? I was like, we didn't do this alone. Like, I mean, our family wasn't nearby. They would come to visit and help, of course, but they were, you know, anywhere from 5 to 7 hours away. So we leaned on our church family, and they were amazing. From fundraising, like a giant fundraiser, to babysitting, grocery shopping. We were part of a young married's group that they were all, we were kind of all having, you know, kids at the same time. Some had kids similar ages to ours that we adopted. And just play dates, like just, I mean, from day one, like, okay, let's, and so that also helped the kids feel connected and other people cared about them. And so that was cool too. Just they met other kids right away.
Yeah.
Because they came in April. We did not put them in school right away because that's the end of the school year. So we had several, you know, months before they were able to like get into school and, you know, meet friends that way. So that's crucial. I think that's just look for ways to serve. You know, there's so many ways to serve a family that's, you know, preparing for, and also, I mean, we got hand-me-down clothes from these other, I mean, just all kinds of ways that you can serve someone. And, and then there's going to be, you know, also there's going to be hard days where you just tell someone like, hey, if you, you know, don't like, if you don't like them today, just, I'm sure they didn't like us sometimes too. Just like with any parenting or, you know, child relationship, but just being like, it's okay. It's, you know, it's going to be okay. You still love them. You may not like them in this very moment, and that's okay. Just, you know, you can call me when that happens and tell me about it.
Yeah. I'm sure the kids feel the same way. Like, I love you. I just don't like how you're choosing to act today.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. Yeah. Everybody oh, yeah, for sure.
To that.
For certain.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Ryan? How do you see people walking alongside you?
So, I mean, this journey really spans four churches. The church that she grew up in, we were married in, is Fair Park Baptist Church in West Monroe, Louisiana, and they were our infertility journey, really. And then we met all of these wonderful people at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, and from there we went to Austin, and Austin is where our two daughters were born and the four kids came home. And so that church was just instrumental in, I mean, they orchestrated this fundraiser that gave us a lot of money toward our adoption. And then those friends of ours, and those friends of ours who had kids, our kids' age. But to go with what she was saying, I think you've got to have friends that you can be really vulnerable, you know, mm-hmm. And to the church, to those who are listening, that maybe you know someone who's adopting, or you, or they're thinking about adoption or whatever, for you to be able to say to them, I will not judge you, I will love you, and I will listen to you when you're hurting. Because we had some of that. And then we had some people that we were vulnerable with that in hindsight we shouldn't have been, you know. Mm-hmm. But to the people in the churches, I would say make sure that you are truly a friend to those who are going through it.
You know, we were just talking, Ryan, about how it would have been easy. I mean, really, I think I'm a mom of four, which usually I can say I'm a mom of four. You're parents of six, and you had them all in 15 months, which is just wild. And I think there is not any parent who is listening, who goes to church, who doesn't identify with the Sunday morning struggle, you know, mm-hmm. just thinking, okay, that's a lot to get six kids, and your
we
kids
can't
need to speak English.
See?
And I'm okay, have you just accepted that about yourself?
Oh, yes.
Like, okay, we're just going to be
yep.
late, and that's
mm-hmm.
how we're going to roll.
Yeah.
But you talked about how if you weren't the pastor, it would have been easy for you just to say,
yeah.
No, we're mm-hmm. not going to go. So speak to that person who's struggling, who's saying, I know I need to walk in community, because really I see it as, you know, it's hard to walk, it's hard to get up and go, but it's hard to walk without that kind of support that you're describing.
Yeah. I think you've got to have that community before you step into this. I mean, mm-hmm. once you're already in the throes of adoption or just raising children, period, doesn't matter if they're adopted or not, you've got to have that support beforehand mm-hmm. so that you have it in the thick of it.
Which is so much better. But if you don't, still go, because there's so many things yeah. that I've been through thinking, what would I do without people showing up with a casserole, you know, without people showing up to do my laundry, and some people saw my literal dirty laundry, but sometimes you just need that kind of help. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk specifically about one of their son's journey. We are in Texas. This story is about to take a football turn. So if you're interested in that, which I hope you are, come on back and we'll talk about this arc, this beautiful story. Thank you again, Ryan and Jessica, for sharing your story and seeing how God has equipped you. We'll be right back on the other side of this break. Don't go away.
Here's Dr. Al Mohler from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
Jesus in the Gospel of John continually points to the scriptures. And as he says famously, these are they that testify of me. If you knew Abraham from the scriptures, you would know me. Jesus himself refused to allow that division between his own authority and the authority of scripture. He never set scripture aside. What he did was to make very clear that he perfectly fulfilled scripture. And of course, he went beyond even the Old Testament law in the Sermon on the Mount, saying, you've heard it said, you shall not commit adultery. I will tell you that if you've lusted in your heart, you have already committed adultery. So Jesus Christ himself drives us back to the authority of Scripture. And evidently, that's exactly where he wants his church to be.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
Are you tired and troubled, weighed down by a heavy load? Praying for change, searching for faith, waiting on a miracle. Are you drowning in questions? Can't believe where the road has led. There's one who knows the heavy you hold, and he says, come to me.
and you can find rest for your soul, rest for your soul. There's a peace.
Welcome back, friends. That is Rest for Your Soul by Austin French. And we're talking about finding rest for your soul in the middle of God writing your story, whatever that is. And I have found in my life, I never expected to be sitting here behind a microphone having a radio show, but that is the story that God has written for me, and I'm so grateful for you all being here part of that. And today, I'm here on location in LaPorte, just outside of Houston, talking with Ryan and Jessica Walling, and they are parents to six children ranging in age from 12 to 24. And if you've been listening, you've heard about their journey of 11 years of infertility, and they began the adoption process for a sibling group of four from Ethiopia, but then had two biological children within 15 months of each other. That 0 to 6 kids in just over a year. That is a wild ride, but filled with God's grace. And Ryan is a pastor, Jessica is a school nurse, and they are passionate about marriage and parenting and adoption and ministry. And as we've been talking about your kids, you know, you've had them home with you for quite a while now, and it's amazing to see their stories unfold. And one of the, and your youngest son, Iyasu, right? Mm-hmm. Iyasu, he has done really, really well. He serves in the worship band right. here in your mm-hmm. church. He is exuberant. He graduated with a 4.96 GPA. He was accepted to Brown University. He is going somewhere else. I'll tell you in just a little bit. But he started playing high school football. I mean, how has it been to see? And I'm asking about Iyasu because he's who shared his story on the news story and just looking at the trajectory of his life. Did you think he was growing up in Ethiopia thinking, oh, I really would like to play football in Texas, God? How did that story happen?
Yeah, he didn't even know what football was when he got here. Football is soccer, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, what we call soccer, that's football to them. And but coming here and meeting all the wonderful people that we met and getting the opportunity to play in little tackle leagues and flag football and all kinds of things like that through some generous friends that let him play and taught him to play. Really all of our kids are really athletic, but our oldest, Solomon, more so in soccer, what we call soccer. Mm-hmm. And then Yosef was track and cross country, big track and cross country guy. But he also had been here long enough that he learned all of the American sports, football, uh-huh. basketball, you know, so he's just played more sports. And he would say he's more athletic than his brothers, but they're athletic in their own right. But he just learned the sports because he had more time in them, and he just fell in love with football, American
football.
Obsessed, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, over the top.
He was going to be an NFL player, and yeah. we had to break down the statistics of how likely that is to happen. But he was like, "I'm an overcomer. I will do it."
Yeah, yeah, and he probably could have.
Well, absolutely. Just knowing his story and where he came from, what was that like for you, Jessica? Just sitting with Iyasu, but also your other kids, just watching them grow and thrive.
Yeah, it's. I mean, just amazing to look back. And I mean, like I said, resilient overcomers, just all their experiences that they, I mean, it's just shaped them into the amazing young people that they are. And Solomon has, you know, is there, some are out of the house, thriving, working full time. Just, I mean, it's really crazy to see how they, you know,
it would be awesome.
What they've done.
I'd love to sit here and say we're just really good parents, but the fact is they really are good kids, and I don't think we can take credit for it. We've done our best to, you know, follow through with what we're going to say and appropriate types of discipline and structure and all of those things that we've tried to build into their lives, but they're just absolutely great. And then I don't mean to keep harping on this, but I think the church walking alongside, not just us, but them as well.
Preach, and literally.
and discipling them and loving them well, and rebuking them when they needed to be rebuked. And
it
truly does
take
a village to do that. And so they had a desire to succeed as well. So, mm-hmm. I mean, our kids, they wanted to try. I don't know that they would say it this way, but maybe they would, that they were given this chance and they didn't want to just waste it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that maybe had a little drive. They were driven to succeed in that way, possibly.
Well, Iyasu said such nice things about you on the news story that was done and just was so affirming of you as his parents. And looking from the outside, I can see how God equipped you as a nurse. You have a special skill set. You know about trauma. You know about trauma-informed care. You know how to take care of multiple patients at once. You know how to triage. You know all of those things. And you're a pastor, so you know about those spiritual elements, those spiritual health, the importance of spiritual formation. But you keep talking, and some of those things, that can be a flip side too, because being a pastor's kid, we know, is not easy, because cue all the PK jokes, right?
Or
the deacon's kid jokes, right? Because they have a front row seat to the hurt that can happen inside of church. And you talked about some people whom maybe you trusted and you shouldn't, and they've seen all of that. And yet you don't have perfect kids, just like you're not perfect parents, but you have healthy kids and you have a healthy family. What do you attribute to that? Because we have this joy of looking at your story in this huge arc. You know, it's not like you just came back a year ago. This is decades now of work. What do you look back and say, this is how we made it? This is how our marriage made it? This is how our family made it? What is it?
Well, because I'm a pastor, I can just keep talking. I'm looking at her to see if she wants to.
Divorce is not an option. Like, that's... It's not in the vocabulary, and we talked about that early, even way before kids. But, you know, we talked about earlier how, because we had, it was so long, it was just me and Ryan, that we did, like, we were very unified. Like, we were just a great team. And so we've had all those years to prepare and think, and sometimes you know, either prepare too much and just, or you prepare for things and it doesn't work out that way, and you're like, oh, okay, we should have spent our time another way. So divorce is not an option, but I mean, really just, I think he's always said, we're in this together. We're in this together. Like, it is hard. It's very hard, but we're in this together. You're not by yourself, you know?
Yeah. People. Divorce wasn't an option for us. And, the 11 years of not having children just, I think, bonded us together and in a way that we didn't realize what the Lord was doing, at that time. She's a nurse who became a nurse practitioner and as you said, is now working as a school nurse. But my undergrad is in sociology, and then I got a master's degree in counseling, and then I did 15 years of student ministry, just working with teenagers. And so looking back, it's like not only her skill set, but also the things I learned in a master's program in counseling. People are like, oh, so you got a degree in counseling and then you became a pastor, so you're not using your degree, right? And I'm like, have you met a human? You know, like, I mean, I use the degree all the time, but also I think it comes to play in just how we parent. I mean, all of those things, you look back and you go, none of those were accidents. Mm-hmm. Like, those were all part of God's providential, as you said, story arc for our lives.
So. Yeah. Well, that's really amazing. And looking at Iyasu, he has been tremendously successful and had a lot of offers to college, a lot of options. He is going to Texas A&M University, you've said. And this is where I hear all the Aggies in my ear. They're saying the word I'm not allowed to say, not because it's a bad word, but because I am not in that. I'm a UT grad, y'all.
Ouch.
I know. That's really hard to say. That word, by the way, I'll spell it. WHOOP. I'm not allowed to say it, but hopefully I'm allowed to spell it. Hopefully we'll get hate mail from Aggies. I don't think you are.
Not yet.
But you'll learn all of those things. Okay. But one of the really touching points of this story arc is that he wants to be a nurse. He wants to be a nurse practitioner. And you found out that his mom, his biological mom, died of cancer. And then you're a nurse practitioner. What does that mean to you to see... That's where he's going. Oh, it gives me goosebumps right now. To see that's his calling, that's what he's pursuing. He had so many options, so many things. He's so smart and talented and could have done so many things. What does that mean to you?
I'm very honored. I've never been the type of parent that neither one of us have been like, you should follow in our footsteps. We don't put pressure on what they choose as a career. We're just like, what are you gifted in? And he was naturally gifted in science. So I, of course, pointed that out to him as if he didn't already know. But so that it just made sense. But I wasn't pressing him to be a nurse. But that's just kind of what, when he started like really drilling down on it, what he wanted to do. So I'm really honored and privileged to be able to, for him to join my profession. I think he's going to be great. He's a great coach, a great teacher, that is part of nursing, coaching others, because you can't do that for them. It's equipping the person to be able to take care of themselves and their whole self. And so, But he's very caring, like it's, and he's a hard worker. He is driven, like more driven than I am. Like, so he will do great. He'll go further than I will. I mean, so I'm super excited for him.
Well, and really beautiful to see that he has a vision and a dream, because from what you learned, his biological mother died because she didn't get the care mm-hmm. that she needed. And so being able to provide that care, as you have shown him how to provide that care, I mean, I really think they say imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, but mm-hmm. knowing, you know, there are not many, I'm just going to say it, there are not many really accomplished Texas football players who say, yeah, I'm going to go to nursing school. And so that is testament, I think, to just the influence that you have had in his life. And I'm sure that he's going to be absolutely amazing. Well, what advice would you give to families who are considering adoption? Because there are a lot of families who think about that, who kind of feel that calling. There are some families who are, say, we're all in, but mm-hmm. it just seems like it has not happened in the way that we thought. You mm-hmm. you mentioned a little bit before about, you know, some of those plans that you had initially falling through. It's not easy. What would you give them now that you're almost two decades into this?
So I think adoption was, obviously it was always a part of our story, because God's writing our story, even though we didn't necessarily know it. But before we were married, we had serious conversations, and one of them was, she felt like one day she would adopt. That had not crossed my mind, but I was open to it. And so I would say to anyone, be open to it. I don't think everyone's called to it, but I think anyone should at least open their heart to the idea of it. One of the key things for me is that adoption is part of the gospel. You know, it was it wasn't easy. It wasn't practical for God to adopt us into his family, but we are adopted and made joint heirs with Christ. Like, We're not necessarily biologically a part of God's family, but we are adopted, you know. And so I think that's a beautiful testament. If you've been saved, then you've been adopted into God's family. And so therefore, I think we should go forth with that ministry of adoption. And if it's not adoption for you, as we were saying earlier, respite care, helping, providing, you know, financial needs or food or clothes or whatever, taking trips, those kinds of things. But on a, I hate to say a more practical level, as if that's not practical, but I think it's super important to, again, recognize that God is sovereign in writing your story. And so if that's something that the Lord has pressed into your heart, or is even now in these moments, like, look into that, consider that, talk to others who have done that. It's not an easy process, but in the end, it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's so powerful to think about our identity. We are adopted, exactly like you said, joint heirs with Christ. And how did that weigh into you guiding your children's identity in Christ? Because sometimes that can be hard for kids who are adopted from somewhere that looks very different from us, has a different culture than you bring them into. How did you encourage them in their identity in Christ?
Well, I mean, we've never, obviously, our kids are from Ethiopia, so they don't look like us. And so there was no secret, plus they were older, so there was no secret as to whether or not they were adopted. But we have continued to form this identity of you are God's child, and then you are our child, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that matters, and that shapes things. So, like, when you get out of the car, going to school, or wherever you're going, you represent our name, but ultimately you represent the Father's name. And so I think I've pressed that into them pretty hardcore. I don't know if you want to add anything to that. But
No,
I said it all. Leave it to the pastor to fill up all the time.
That is perfectly okay, because I think it just really, it sounds so simple, but the truth that has come through is just, again, God writing their story, and you're not trying to write over it, trying not to use your own human wisdom to overcome their trauma. I mean, God gives you people in your life. He gives you certain skills. He gives you certain knowledge to be able to do that. But it is God who has done this great and miraculous mm-hmm. work. And what I think about is, what will the generations be like to come? It's kind of like one of my favorite movies is It's a Wonderful Life, you know, from Christmas. And you look back and you see, mm-hmm. like, what would that be like if you hadn't said yes? And how is God going to use these four children to impact generation upon generation? That's amazing. No matter where you are in your adoption journey or supporting someone else's, I pray the Lord will bless you and keep you and make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you until we see you right back. Oh, thanks for joining us on location. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.